Okay, I've got 1 o'clock, so I'd like to get us started. Try to keep us on time. Good afternoon, everyone. We need to start with our preamble. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded. And the recording will be posted on the authority's website. Okay, I'd like to start with a roll call of board members. My name's Peter Lisi, board chair. Obviously, I'm present. Bettina Brown Eyes.
Here.
Thank you. Andrew Foster.
Here.
Thank you. Michael Azzotti.
I'm here.
Thank you. Carrie Kelly.
Here.
Thank you. Julie Savino. Julie? Okay, not yet. And Laura Baker? Laura? No. And Jeanette Weldon?
I'm here.
And Marty Budd. I'm not expecting Marty, but are you on the line, Michael? Martin? Marty? I guess not. Last call for Laura Baker. Julie Savino. Okay, well, hopefully they'll join in progress. So would the
Julie's
roll.
there. I think she just was on mute.
Who was that?
Julie is
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. Okay, so thanks for picking that up, Bettina. Hi, Peter. I'm here. I'm present.
wonderful. Thank you, Julie. Okay, the roll call is complete. Individuals must state their name and title before speaking during the meeting. Votes will be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. And lastly, in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or an email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or number two, the time the meeting will resume. So with that, the meeting is called to order. A roll call is complete. And our first order of business are two sets of minutes. First being from our January 9th meeting. And I'm hoping that people will spend a few minutes reviewing the minutes from both the January 9th and the January 25th meeting. To start with, I'd entertain a motion to accept the minutes from our January 9th meeting. Would someone like to move that?
So moves, this is Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew. Is there a second?
Second, Mike Azzotti.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, it's been made. The motion's been made and seconded to approve the minutes as presented from January 9th, our January 9th, 2024 meeting. Are there any corrections or edits? Any comments or discussion? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes from January 9th as presented, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Thank you very much. Motion carries unanimously. All right, we also have some minutes from our January 25th meeting. Similarly, I hope folks have taken a few minutes to review them. And is there a motion to accept the minutes as presented?
Bettina, so moved.
Thank you, Bettina. Is there a second?
Julie Savino, second.
Thank you, Julie. The motion's been made and seconded to accept the minutes as presented from our January 25th meeting. Are there any corrections or edits? Any comments or discussion on those minutes? Anything? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes from January 25th as presented, please say aye.
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 Anyone
Aye.
opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. All right, with that business taken care of, I will turn the meeting over to the folks from Berry Dunn for the latest in our internal audit reports.
Yes, thank you, and I'll just share my screen quick. Perfect. Are you seeing the slide deck?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right. So I'm Katie Belukis. I'm a senior manager at Berry Dunn, and I'm joined by Alan Goodwin, who is the manager on the Chiefa engagement. So these are the results for the third quarter of fiscal year 2024. So really from the January to March timeframe. We did look at two areas this quarter, the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program of CHESLA. And this was the first time we audited this program, as this was a new program that started during fiscal year 23. And then the second area that we looked at was bond redemptions, and that was with CSLF. And that was last audited in fiscal year 2018. So this was the second time we were reviewing this program. So before I pass it over to Alan to talk through the specifics of our audit work and testing, we did just want to provide a couple summaries of the risk ratings that you'll see throughout our reports and throughout his portion of the presentation. So we've assigned risk ratings for any recommendations that are consistent with all of our reports, and they're ranked from low to high in terms of the severity of the recommendation, as well as to help with prioritizing the area within your normal course of business. So anything that we've identified as a high risk recommendation would propose a significant risk to the organization, and any of those high rated recommendations would require immediate attention by the organization. Anything in that medium category would not pose a risk by itself, but could indicate that there's some type of control or a weakness in a control. And this is something that we would expect to be addressed within the normal course of business. And then any recommendation that we've identified as low is really unlikely to propose to be a significant risk. And these are really just best practice recommendations that should be evaluated by the board and by management, really using a cost-benefit analysis, as well as really really looking into the benefits that any type of recommendation in that low category would bring to the organization overall. Just another refresher, within our reports, we provide an overall rating of the area through our audit procedures, and they rank from strong all the way to inadequate based on any recommendations that have been identified. So any audit areas that we've identified as strong would be anyone that has minor findings or enhancements, but really no high or medium rated findings were identified. Anything in that adequate bucket would be no high rated findings, but there could be a number of findings that just aren't as significant. Needs improvement would be an area that we identified one or more significant control weaknesses. And then inadequate would be findings that indicate significant control weaknesses and would require immediate attention. So now at this point, I'm going to pass it over to Alan to walk us through really the results of our testing.
Thank you, Katie. So my name is Alan Goodwin, and as Katie mentioned, I'm a manager here with Barry Dunn. We had two really good programs that we reviewed the last quarter. We will start with the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program, which is a CHESLA program. This is it's like a newer program to a CHESLA, and this program offers an interest rate subsidy on the Alliance District refinance loans for teachers who are employed by the 30 to 40 Alliance District public schools. The program was funded from $7 million from the state of Connecticut back in 2022. And as of the date of our testing, there were about 56 loans issued, which totaled just over $1 million. We attested the internal controls, we verified interest rates, we've reviewed eligibility of applicants, and the various loan conditions back to the Alliance Teacher Refi Loan Program Manual, the operational guidelines, and the MOA with the state of Connecticut. And overall, we found that this program it really had some sound internal controls, but we do have two recommendations to help strengthen those internal controls. The first recommendation has to deal with the bank statements where these funds sit from the state. We have noted that CHESLA does a great job of summarizing life-to-date activity which includes the funded loans, any adjustments, invoices paid, or like interest earned. To help increase these controls, we recommend that the authority just add a line to this already prepared summary that documents that the bank balance like reconciles back to like the general ledger, the book balance. Once again, we found no exceptions, but this But this line where we're just reconciling back from like the bank balance back to like the book balance will just help ensure that the general ledger that there's no like inconsistencies with like the general ledger and that all the activity within the general ledger is correct and does agree back to that like summarized life-to-date activity reports. We also recommend that someone within the accounting function over at Chifa just review this reconciliation as once again this will limit any errors or like inconsistencies within like the general ledger. The next recommendation that we had has to deal with the vendor due a diligence policy. And like the authority like relies on a third party service organization to review all of the ADTLS, the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy applications. And we do understand that CHESLA and CHIFA has recently like revamped their review of the service organizational control reports or SOC report, the SOC reports. But we did note that due to timing, that the 2023 SOC report for Campus Door, who is that third party service org, has not been received yet, and therefore there has not been a formal review yet over the Campus Door service or that SOC report. And once again, this has to do with like the timing of like when we did our testing and that SOC report just wasn't finalized yet. But we do want to continue to recommend that CHESLA and CHIFA like perform these timely review of the SOC reports of the subservice organizations. And then that this would just help ensure that internal controls are in place by those third party vendors. And then overall, we did find that the Alliance District Teacher Loan Subsidy Program did have strong internal controls. And as you can see on this slide, we just put that the overall results rating is a strong. The next cycle that we reviewed has to do with CSLF, and it has to do with the bond redemptions. We have two recommendations to help improve controls with this function as well. The first recommendation, it's like a new recommendation this year, just establish some formal policies and procedures over the bond redemption process. And during our testing, we had noted that the bond redemption process is not formally documented. And like we did note that there was a formal bond redemption policy that was dated I think it was March of 2017. But there's been numerous changes to like the process. And we just recommend that CSLF update those processes or just update that policy to include like the new processes to help ensure that the current state is a documented formally. And then this would just help to keep CSLF in compliance with laws and regulations, and will help with like decision making and just helps streamline internal processes. The second recommendation we have over bond redemptions it ha has to deal with bank account reconciliations. And then this is the first risk assessment that is not low. So this is like a medium risk assessment risk rating, which means that this recommendation could indicate like a missing control or like a weakness in like an existing control. This recommendation was also noted back in September of 2017, but there has been some changes. During our current testing, we had noted that the outside party is no longer responsible for reconciling the revenue bond bank statements, those trust statements. And now CHIFA is now performing all of the accounting functions. We had noted that there are no formal bank account reconciliations over those revenue bond bank, those trust statements. And I just want to add that all the other bank accounts are being reconciled. We are just talking about these trust statements here. We just recommend that the foundation and CHIFA just work together to establish a policy requiring a timely bank reconciliations over those trust statements. And we did talk with some members of management and feel that this recommendation can be easily resolved through just like a cover sheet that's formally approved. And then overall, controls over bond redemptions were deemed adequate here. Now we'll bring it back to Katie to go over like the next quarters, the end of fiscal year 2024, and the start of fiscal year 2025.
Alan,
Yes.
this is Peter Lisi. Before we go back to Katie, can we go back to the previous slide? I just have a quick question.
Absolutely, yeah.
Bank account reconciliations, you just finished by saying it could be taken care of just with a simple cover letter, and then which then gets approved. Does that get approved by the who approves it? Is that a board approval, or what
Yeah,
did you mean by that?
that would be internal to the finance department here.
Oh, okay. That was my question. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, they're helping us here with tightening up some best practices by ensuring that we have a formalization of the reconciliation. So
Yeah.
right now, of course, we're matching statement to general ledger, but there's no document that we can hand these guys and say, here it is being tied together, and here's a signature by a manager that says this is
Got
complete.
it. Got it. Okay. Thank you, Charles.
Yep.
Perfect. So now when we think about our upcoming quarter, so for the fourth quarter of fiscal year 24, so really the quarter we're about to be in, so from April to June, we're going to be completing a few audits. So the first of which is the human resources policies and procedures coupled with payroll. And we did audit those areas back in fiscal year 18, and we also had followed up on some of the issues that were identified as a result of those audits in prior years. But ultimately, this will be the first time we're looking at that in a few years. And then information technology will also be part of this quarter's work. And we audited that in fiscal year 2020, the last time. This area for IT was supposed to be performed in the third quarter, but due to the chief a move, we had moved it into the fourth quarter because obviously the move was very chaotic for the IT folks. And so really at this point, we've started to work through the documentation. We've sent our timelines as well as some sample requests. And we also had a kickoff with the IT team. So that work really, when you think about the fourth quarter and when we're back in June presenting, that's really well underway. And then for the first quarter of fiscal year 2025, we'll be looking at public bond offerings, which we audited last in fiscal year 21, and then a bond documents and legal review, which we audited last in fiscal year 2019. And so at this point, we can open it up to any questions that the board may have.
Any questions? Thoughts, comments, questions for Katie? Katie or Alan? Charles, any thoughts on all this? Sounds like it went fine.
I'd like to comment on the CSLF procedures. We have completed that, shared it with Alan recently. So happy to have that one coming off the list and having an updated procedural document. I just wanted to share that with you. And then also regarding the SOC report, as Alan pointed out, we are awaiting delivery from Campus Store. But we've made the request, so we're working towards achieving that objective.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And Charles, this is Andrew. Do you mean the cover sheet that was mentioned that we have tested that and that was adequate?
No, so I think you're referring to the procedures, which is the second item
Right.
for CSLF. That one has been accomplished. The cover sheets, we're implementing that and should have that ready very soon.
Okay, anyone else? Okay, thank you, Katie. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, moving on, we're going to have a little board education from the folks at Hilltop and RBC. All right, I see it up on the screen.
Okay, great. And I'm not sure if this is Scott McIntyre. Can you guys hear me
Okay,
okay?
Scott. Yes.
Great. I'm with Hilltop Securities. I'm a managing director and I'm head of the asset management group. So I'm going to give you guys an economic review and interest rate outlook, obviously. And let's see. Peter, are you? There we go. There we go. I'll just mention it when we're ready to turn here. But economic growth actually was accelerated in 2023, which is a bit of a surprise because the Fed is actively trying to slow down the economy right now. Let me turn on my actually, let's see if I can turn myself on here. Start video. Okay. Economic growth was actually stronger in 2023 than anybody thought that it would be. A lot of folks thought that we'd see a recession, and we didn't. It was actually stronger in the second half of last year, which is a real surprise considering that the Fed has raised interest rates as much as they have. Right now, if you look at the first quarter, which of course we're almost done with, through March 15th, it was tracking at 2.3%, and that's a long way from recession. So anybody who at one point thought a recession was coming, it doesn't appear as though that's going to be the case in 2024. All three major stock market indexes reached record highs this month. Last week might have been the exception, but for the most part, there's a lot of optimism. There's mixed, this is very important, but on inflation right now, the signals that we're seeing are mixed. I'll go into that in some detail. The Fed held steady in December and January. They actually have a meeting. The timing here is really good because they meet this week and they're not expected to announce a rate hike or a rate cut on Wednesday afternoon, but they will give us some information about what they expect will happen going forward. So we'll get to see their interest rate projections. And at this point right now, uncertainty is the central theme and volatility is ruling the market. So next slide. So, right now, normally when you think of economic growth, one of the things you look to is the labor market. The labor market reflects economic growth. Some people think it's a better indication than GDP growth is. And right now, non-farm payrolls have been quite a bit higher than expected, averaging over 200,000 per month. Job openings, you probably have heard this quite a bit. They're still very, very elevated. Roughly 9 million job openings and about 6.4 million people seeking jobs. So it's about 1.4 jobs for every job seeker. If you go back 6, 8 months, it was actually 2 jobs for every 1 job seeker. So it's improving. It's becoming a little more imbalanced. Next slide. A couple other things I want to mention. I hear this all the time when I'm up in front of folks talking. They talk about the people who are not wanting to work, and that actually doesn't hold water. So if you look at prime age workers from age 25 to 54, that participation rate is near the highest it's ever been in history at almost 84%. So what's happened in the labor market is demographics. It's 10,000 baby boomers per day reaching the age 65. And once you get to 65, the percentage of workers who are actually working full time drops dramatically. So you're having a whole lot of folks reaching that retirement age and sidelining themselves. The pandemic actually added to that. A lot of folks, felt like during the pandemic, for whatever reason, they made choices to potentially retire early. So there's a lot of workers who have exited the labor force, and that's created a bit of an issue we're going to have to work through. Next slide. So bringing us to economic growth, and this is really the report card of economic growth. I mentioned it before, but we had a whole lot of ups and downs during the pandemic and post-pandemic, and things have normalized in a sense, in that we are normally expected to have GDP growth quarter over quarter analyzed at around 2% to 2.5%. That's the rate that the economy can grow theoretically without causing inflation. Of course, we have a lot of inflation right now. The third quarter was really strong at 4.9%. Fourth quarter was a little bit slower at 3.3%. And like I said, the first quarter we're tracking at 2.3. So, if 0 over 2 consecutive quarters is the textbook definition of recession, we're a long way from that. The economy is still growing really strong. And as a result of that, we're seeing inflation being stickier than we would like it to be. The Fed has targeted 2% for its inflation target. We're a long way from that. I'll get into that in just a second. But really, before inflation starts to come down, they're going to hold rates where they are. As soon as inflation starts to normalize, they'll cut. Next slide, please. Retail sales. The only reason I want to mention retail sales is, and it's not a real good chart here, but retail sales are a reflection of the consumer, and the consumer drives the U.S. economy. So in a sense, if you're looking for the economy to slow down, you can look at where we've been and where we are. And consumers are not spending as much. They don't have nearly the capacity. If I would have looked at, you know, credit card balances being at absolute record highs, so over $1 trillion. If I would have looked at savings being half of what they were pre-pandemic, if I would have looked at student loans theoretically resuming last October, and folks having to take that money that had been used for other things and now apply it towards student loans. If you look at all of those things together, it's hard to imagine that consumers are going to have the capacity to be able to spend and drive the economy going forward. But they've been really resilient up to this point. Next slide, please. Then we get to inflation, and I can't pretend that inflation is the most important economic indicator, because it is. This is a, I won't say it's a noisy slide, but there's several things to look at. The first thing is the green line, and that is the overall CPI. That is what's used for, COLA increases, for instance. That has been really high. It was above 9%. It came down very, very sharply from June of 2022 until really June, July, August of this past year. And then it's gotten really sticky. And the reason it came down so quickly was because energy prices came down. And right now, energy prices are actually moving higher along with gas prices. So we look as much as anything else at CPI core, which is the red line. And that excludes energy prices along with food prices. But that's been sticky too. And the reason that's been so sticky is because of shelter costs. Shelter costs have been, rent and owner's equivalent rent have been a lot stickier than the Fed imagined that they would be. And, you know, we do know anecdotally that rents are moving lower. They just haven't showed up in CPI yet. The only other thing I really want to talk about in this slide is if you look at the bars are really telling, because they tell us where the inflation is coming from. And right now, the light blue line obviously is generating most of it. And that's the service sector of the economy. So, you know, and the service sector is very broad. It includes shelter costs, but it also includes bars and restaurants, which are up about 29% since the pandemic began, and not a lot of other things. So, and the service sector is also what generates a lot of the wage increases that we're seeing right now. So that's really why things have been so tough for this last run of inflation. Next slide, please. I want to show you this just because. So this is 50-year history of CPI. So this is the annual rate of the consumer price index. And 2% is what the Fed is targeting, and 2% wasn't really very hard to target for a long time. In fact, for a while, the Fed was lowering interest rates to try to generate some inflation because it was really hard to see that 2% target. And the Fed wants to see some growth in prices. Now, of course, the pandemic and post-pandemic has caused a big spike. It's come down quite a bit, but that last little leg back down to 2% has been the tough part. Next slide, please. So I want to show you PPI producer prices are, once upon a time, they fed through much more. They were a lot better correlated with consumer prices. But they do feed through to a certain degree into consumer prices. And producer prices have come down quite a bit more than consumer prices have. In fact, for the most part, final demand PPI has been well below the Fed's target. That's a plus. If you're looking for a plus, producer prices are lower. That really does suggest that as we roll forward into this next year, that inflation is going to come down quite a bit more on the consumer side than it has so far. Next slide, please. I want to mention, especially with you guys, I want to mention home prices, because this is, I mean, you could really go on for an hour on just homes alone. But the price of existing homes, which makes up about 85% of the homes that are on the market, is actually moving higher, which is kind of unusual unless you realize that if you have a home already, you probably have refinanced that or took out a loan that may be somewhere near 3-3.5%. So you're very reluctant to sell your home. So there's a lot of sand in the gears of the existing home market, and that's caused a lack of supply, and that lack of supply has caused home prices to move higher. Despite the fact that home sales are down dramatically, new homes have tried to fill in that gap. New homes prices are down. And the reason why that is because there's been a trend over the course of the last couple of years to build new homes that are smaller than they were before and more affordable. And hopefully that trend will continue. But it's kind of an interesting trend. New homes are trying to really fill that gap that existing homes have caused as a result of so many people being locked in at the lower mortgage rates. And I will say, as we move forward, that home prices and shelter, if you remember, is a big component of why overall inflation has stayed as high as it is. So if you're looking for a reason, it has to do with supply, and it has to do with mortgage rates on existing homes being so low. Next slide, please. I do want to mention that the Fed looks at not CPI, not PPI, but they look at personal consumption expenditures, and they have a much smaller housing component. And right now they are below 3%. So trending lower, the expectation is that PCE by the end of summer is going to be closer to 2.4, 2.5%. In theory, that gives the Fed the latitude to be able to cut interest rates. I'm going to throw this in. I know I'm talking like a madman here, and I apologize, but there's a lot going on. The Fed would like to cut interest rates. One of the reasons the Fed would really like to cut interest rates if inflation were to move lower is that we have a $34 trillion national debt, and the Fed is a big part of the interest paid on that debt. And right now, interest paid on that debt is above $800 billion per year. So it's about approximately what we're spending on the military budget. And it continues to increase. So if the Fed had the opportunity to lower interest rates without sparking additional inflation, or I'm sorry, yes, inflation, they would. They just really haven't had the opportunity, but they're chomping at the bit, because that would be really helpful if we could get interest rates lower, so debt service costs were lower, so the overall budget would be lower. Next slide, please. Okay, this is the two-year Treasury note yield. It actually spiked in October at almost just above 5.20, and it came down rapidly because it looked like inflation was in check and the Fed was going to be able to cut rates, you know, as soon as the March meeting, which is now off the board. But then we started to see inflation move back up or get sticky, and then you can see that the two-year note yield moved higher. And right now, you know, is, I guess we're probably pretty close to 4.70 today. And the reason why it moved higher is because it looks like the Fed is going to be on hold for longer. Our expectation is the Fed starts to cut rates at the June meeting. It could be the July meeting, but they certainly will cut this year. It's just going to be later before they start those rate cuts. Next slide is going to be the 10-year note yield. And it followed in a similar, I'm sorry, if you could turn that, please. It's the 10-year note yield. It follows a very similar pattern. You know, once inflation started to rear its ugly head again, it started to move higher. The outlook is much lower by the time we get to the end of this year. But for right now, we're certainly higher than we were, you know, in December. Next slide, please. So bringing us to the Fed, and if you look at that slide there on the left-hand side, if it went all the way back to 2008, you would see that the overnight rate was actually at zero, effectively at zero, for 7 years, from 2008 to 2015. The Fed had the opportunity to move rates higher because the economy started to stabilize and look good. They cut all the way to zero again during the pandemic. That, in retrospect, was a mistake. It stayed there for 2 years, and then the Fed has had to very, very rapidly raise rates to slow the economy down. And their hope was, in doing so, they'd be able to get inflation in check. But when you throw $6 trillion into the economy, which they did during the pandemic. That has been a fire that they started that has been really hard to douse. So, inflation is coming down. It's not coming down nearly as fast as the Fed would like it to. We're going to get a new dot plot, which is the Fed's interest rate projection on Wednesday. This is the December dot plot on the right-hand side. The December dot plot showed it very hard to go into, but if you look just at 2024, the expectation among Fed officials was that they were going to cut rates by 75 basis points by the end of 2024, and then they were going to cut by about another 125 basis points by 2025, and basically be back to 2.5% roughly in 2026. That was the expectation. We'll see what they say on Wednesday, but they will certainly adjust their dot plot. So that was what the Fed was thinking. Next slide is what the market was thinking interest rates were going to do. And if you start at the beginning of the year, the market thought that in January of 2025, the overnight rate would be down to 350-ish. So dramatic rate cuts were expected when this year began. 25 basis point rate increases were expected between January of 2024 and the end of January 2025. Flash forward to most recent, the 15th, on Friday, when I put this thing together, the expectation by the market is that the Fed will cut about 3.5 times, not 3 times, not 4 times. So that has changed a considerable amount. The reason that it's changed, again, is because the last two inflation reports have been too hot. So next slide. Now, the next slide is what Wall Street is thinking. This is 70-odd economists, and they expect, if you look at that middle highlighted part, they expect that the Fed will have cut 100 basis points by this time next year. So we'll go from, or 125 basis points, basically going from an upper band of 550 to an upper band of 425. So the market has expects that that it will cut, well, the economists expect that the Fed will cut more than the market thinks and more than the Fed thinks, which is not that unusual. They expect the two-year Treasury note will get down all the way to 350 by this time next year, and of course, it's a 470 now. They expect the 10-year will get all the way down to 374. They do not expect to see a recession. If you go back up to that top bar, they expect that GDP growth for all of 2024 will average about 1.4%. So quite a bit lower than 2023, but by the same token, they don't expect that we're going to see recession. So next slide. To outlook, basically wrapping things up here. GDP growth is expected to be weaker in 2024, but no recession. A disinflationary trend throughout 2024 and 2025, but not deflation. So that means that home prices are not going to go backwards. The thought is that they're just going to grow at a lesser rate. Grocery prices on the whole are not going to be back where they were pre-pandemic. They're just going to grow at a lesser rate. Same thing with car prices, although I would expect we might see some deflation in both new and used car prices because, you know, production has increased so much. And at some point, we're going to start to see car manufacturers cut their prices. They're also using a lot more technology, which allows prices to be cut more. So maybe deflation in some areas, but overall, just slower inflation, not deflation. The federal budget problem has grown too big to ignore. So at some point, I expect there's going to be some cuts in terms of federal agency spending, and that could certainly slow the economy down further. The Fed will begin rate cuts this summer, June or July, kind of a toss-up at this point in time. The data will dictate between now and then. There is no good outcome for the 2024 election, in my opinion. Regardless of who gets elected, I think there's going to be, at the very least, volatility, a lot of uncertainty, a tremendous amount of uncertainty, I would say. And uncertainty remains a central theme going forward, both for the stock market, the bond market, the economy. There's just a lot of balls in play right now. You know, you can expect that interest rates are going to move up and interest rates are going to move down. But the general thought is that They will move down throughout 2024 and into 2025, both on the short end and the long end. Next slide, and I may have wrapped myself up here. Does anybody have any questions? I didn't mean to speak quite as long, but there was a lot to go over.
Questions for Scott? Yeah, there was a lot to go over. Appreciate that.
Scott, this is Bettina. You mentioned this phrase several times, and I just wanted to know if you can just define it. You keep mentioning about sticky. What do you mean by sticky?
So by sticky, what that means is that, you know, for instance, the CPI, headline CPI, came down from about 9% to, you know, roughly 3-4%, and it stalled. The core rate got down to just under 4%, and it stalled. It has gone from 3.8, 3.9. The Fed would like that to get all the way down closer to 2%. And right now, it's sort of, after coming down dramatically from last summer until December, inflation has not cooperated the way most economists thought that it would.
Okay, thank you. Stalled, stuck, maybe?
Stalled, stuck, sand in the gears, all the above.
Thank you, helpful.
All those technical terms.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyone else? Questions? Okay. Very interesting. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, this is Tim Webb, Senior Vice President, Hilltop Securities. Thanks, Scott, for providing that to us. Jeanette asked me to give a little bit of a recap on the student loan space right now, and I think that RBC might chime in as well. As you know, CESLA has, over the last X number of years, gone to market in the spring. There's the anticipation to do that as again this year. We're working on a transaction. We had a kickoff call just the other day. RBC will be working as the lead managing underwriter on the transaction. There are the usual suspects that will be coming into market, as a reference to Casablanca back in the day, look to come in this spring. Over the last 2 years, there have been about 15 not-for-profits or state agencies that have issued bonds. In no particular order, there's the Brazos in Texas, obviously CESLA, Maine, Vermont, Massachusetts, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Minnesota, New Hampshire, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island. I think that covers it. This year, we can see Maine coming to market sometime right around when CESLA will come, as will Vermont. Rhode Island generally comes at that time frame. RBC can comment on that, as well as MIFA. We don't think that there are going to be issuances probably from Minnesota. Maybe not from Kentucky, but we don't know at this point. The state of Texas will be doing a transaction sometime in June, maybe July. They're a little bit different than CESLA in that they are a state GO issuer. Right now is a pretty good time to be in the market. The rates are, as far as MMD to Treasury, is at a very good ratio right now. We often look at the 10-year MMD rate versus 10-year Treasury. Traditionally, that ratio is in the 60s, mid-60s, maybe upper-level 60s ratio. And as of Friday, I think it was at a 57%. One of the things that might be beneficial to CESLA is that one of your competitors is the plus rate out there. And just to remind you, the plus rate is set off the 10-year Treasury plus a spread of 460. If we were to set the rate as of Friday close, that would have been an 891, and that would compare to an 805 last year, even though bond rates are very similar to where they were last year. Obviously, things can change between now and when we would go to market. We're looking to market sometime around May 8th, which is the reset date on the plus. That's still somewhat in flux. But right now, we're positive moving forward. But as Scott pointed out, there's a tremendous amount of volatility. We see the Treasury bond moving up and down with pretty big movements, depending upon what is being said by the Fed. We'll have a little bit of a guidance on Wednesday, and then there'll be another meeting in June, which would be most likely after we price. That's a very quick overview. I know that Scott went a little bit long, so I'll cut mine short and maybe turn it over to Jeff to see if he has some comments on the market and about student loan space in general, unless there are any questions.
Tim, it's Bettina. What's the size?
The size is, that size is still being discussed, but somewhere between 25 to 30 million. You know, we may have Josh address that. There have been some positive developments at Chesla with regard to potential volume. We may want to look at increasing the volume, but that's a function of staff being able to discern what the utilization rates will be moving forward.
And remind me again, do you need the state's disclosure?
Yes.
We will, yes. So regarding the sizing, Bettina, I think we're probably looking at issuing to our volume cap, which is about $30 million.
Okay. We are scheduling a bond sale, but we're not pricing until June.
Yeah, we'll get with bond counsel to discuss that. We generally like to have the disclosure in the document. Yep. I don't know whether, I mean, we'll have a conversation with the underwriters at RBC and the underwriters on our desk to make that determination. I think that Josh likes to have his funding and his rates in hand by the end of May to start for the 24-25 season.
Yep.
So we will probably have to see what we do without having that disclosure.
We'll coordinate with you.
Thank you.
Happy to work with you.
Any other questions for Tim? All right, Jeff, did you want to add anything?
I'll just take a minute, if that's okay, a couple of minutes. So just to put a little couple of finer points on the time, the schedule, the student loan season schedule. So Tim mentioned student loan season kicking off. Technically, it kicks off today. RISLA is planning to post an official statement for $127 million part taxable, part tax exempt deal. I think $68.5 million of it is tax exempt. The rest of it is taxable. FIA is expecting to post about 10 days from now $146.4 million, all tax exempt. And then posting date isn't determined, but in early May, could be the week before plus, could be the week of plus, could be the week after plus. New Jersey, which is one of the bellwether issuers, we're planning to bring $228.3 million all tax exempt for New Jersey. And then I'm looking at my pipeline, you know, timetable here, and Chesla comes up next, followed by MIFA, which generally prices in early June. Their transactions tend to be fairly large, and they're looking at 470 plus million this year. And they like to catch the June coupon payments, if you will. June is a big reinvestment date in the muni market. A lot of coupon interest and principal payments come in, and they like to catch that extra demand in early June. So that, if you add all that up, including a couple of issues that Tim mentioned, FAME and VSAC, that we're not involved in, that adds up to a little over $1.05 billion. And then we see about $400 million of additional bonds coming in sort of after the official season, so kind of July, August, September timeframe. So we're looking at about a $1.4 to $1.5 billion overall year for tax-exempt and taxable student loan bonds out of the state agency sector. So that's what we're seeing right now.
Okay.
Any questions?
Great. Thank you, Jeff. Any questions? Anything? Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
All right. Hearing no questions, excuse me, we will move on to the financial report. Carly, would you like to walk us through?
Sure. Carly Levin, thank you. So we will start on page 34 of the packet with the agency account. For the 6 months ending December 31st, 2023, revenues over expenses before non-operating income and expenses were $202,329. Revenues over Expenses after non-operating income and expenses were $811,155, and that was due primarily from a transfer from the 2023 bond fund of proceeds to the agency. And this was an inducement resolution that would, had been approved by the board back in November 15th of 2022. And prior to the issuance of the 2023 bond series closing, Chesla opened up a 2022 non-trust in-school loan fund outside of the trust with $2 million that had been transferred from the Refi CT loan program, which is also outside of the trust. The resolution allowed for Chesla to reimburse itself from the 2023 bond proceeds for the amount of loans that were dispersed from the 2022 non-trust. Questions on that? No? Okay. So also we had total year-to-date revenues were $3,053 over budget, and then the total year-to-date expenses were $21,526 under budget. If there's no questions for the agency, I'll move on to the 2020-19 resolution. So page 39 of your board packet, please. Thanks. The total change in net position for the 2019 resolution before transfers was an increase of $505,657. And the total change in net position after the transfer was $323,988. So I will go over the transfer line. For the quarter to date, it was negative $181,669. And that consists of that transfer that I mentioned, to the agency of the $507,367. But then also with that, the loans that were generated from the 2022 non-trust, those loans moved over to the 2023 bond series. So that along with, so I'm sorry, those loans net of payments, because those payments automatically go into the 2020-23 revenue account, net of any returns was $333,320. We also moved over from the 2022 non-trust a portion of the allowance for loan loss that pertained to those loans that were transferred, and that was $4,622. Any questions regarding the transfers? Okay. Page 42 of your packet, please, and I'll go over the other programs. For the scholarship fund, for the second quarter, we had a total change in net position of a decrease of $4,264, and the decrease was due to additional scholarships that were awarded, and we have interest earned on the investment, so we're able to do that. The total change in net position for the non-bond refi program was an increase of $78,021. Total change in net position for the Alliance District Loan Subsidy Program was an increase of $60,595. And total change in net position for the in-school non-trust before transfers was $14,126. And total change in net position after the transfer was a decrease of $311,572. And that's regarding the transfer line of the negative $325,698. Those are those transfers that went from or went into the 2023 bond issue. So that is all I have, unless there's questions.
Thank you, Carly. Are there any questions? All right. All set, Carly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Jeanette, authority update.
The first item, which is the spring financing, I think that's already been touched on with the expected schedule. And okay. So I did just want to mention that we would at some point between now and pricing, need to have a special virtual Chesla board meeting when we have the documents prepared, the cash flows prepared, approve the actual bond issuance before we price. And so I don't know if you want to talk about this under other business or now, Peter, but the two dates we were thinking of were April 15 or April 22nd. Yeah. So just to let people know that. And then I wanted to highlight that CHESL was able to achieve placement of two op-ed articles, and I think they have been circulated to the board. The first one was in the Connecticut Post back in November, and that was on the impact of high-cost alternatives, like using credit cards to pay for your tuition. And then most recently, on January 30th in the Connecticut Mirror, there was an op-ed that was sort of the perils of PLUS loans. And both of these op-eds were in response to research briefs that CHESLA's Trade Association had commissioned. And the op-eds themselves were developed by Dan Gingy, our communications and government relations person. Just briefly, legislative update, and Dan is not able to be on this this call because he's over at the legislative office building. But we did have, if you recall, a student loan subsidy proposal that was going to be sort of a generic boilerplate, so to speak, concept, so that we would confer with the Office of Workforce Strategy on what are some high need work shortage areas that could then potentially be plugged into this program for a loan rate subsidy similar to what we've done with the Alliance District. And so that became incorporated into a governor's bill, Senate Bill 13. It was voted out of the Higher Ed Committee and referred to Finance, Revenue, and Bonding, and it's awaiting action there. And it was referred to Finance, Revenue, and Bonding because if the state funds it, there might be a bonding component to it. So we're working to have it come out of that committee and be sent to the Senate floor. We also had our Raise Bill 304, which is the one that included our two other initiatives. One was to be able to replace as an option, rather than funding the SCARF with bond proceeds, that we could use a surety bond. So that seemed to, there was not a lot of commentary on that piece of the bill. There was in committee a lot of discussion of the other piece, which was to allow borrowers under the age of 18 to be eligible to apply for CHESLA loans. So some concerns were raised about, you know, are those under 18 knowledgeable enough to become student loan borrowers? Reality is that, you know, more than 95% of all our loans have a co-borrower because the student cannot meet the income thresholds. But nevertheless, there was some concern about that, but it was voted out of the Higher Ed Committee, and it's being sent to the floor for further action. So there's some ongoing discussion there. So that's kind of the current status of what's happening legislatively.
Jeanette, can you just remind me again the bill with regarding the surety for the SCARF?
304.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions for Jeanette on that portion? Jeanette, I'll just say I'm thrilled to have seen the op-eds from Dan Gingy out there in the Mirror and wherever they can get placed. I've always said at the Chief and CHESLA meetings, I think both authorities do wonderful things for the state, and sometimes we're called the best kept secret in the state. And I just think getting pieces out there like Dan has done is terrific. So kudos to you and kudos to Dan for spending the time to write them and get them published. So well done.
Yes, I will pass that along to Dan. And it's definitely been quite notable and something we haven't achieved in a while.
Yeah.
So the next thing I wanted to quickly go through in your package was a strategic plan status report, and it was fairly lengthy. Hopefully people had the chance to look through it. It kind of covered, I think, the first 7 months of fiscal 24. I'm not going to page through that, but I do have a few slides that just highlight some of the key achievements. If you want to go to the next page, Kara, it highlights some of the key achievements. So just notable on the collaboration pillar that we have. We did in early November host a pretty significant event. It was pulled together on a very quick schedule by Josh, also working closely with Julie Savino as the president of CAPFA. And it was a new FAFSA and state aid for financing higher education. It was an educational segment for school counselors and advisors on just where things stand with the new FAFSA application and also other types of state aid incorporating CHESLA into that. So it was very well received, over 80 school counselors and advisors attending. Then we also, as noted here, the Alliance District, I think this came up in the report, the internal audit report, 57 teachers, over $1 million. Continuing, Josh is working diligently to continue to market that program. Similarly, employer student loan repay, three employers covering 21 Connecticut employees. We're hoping this program will benefit. The governor's also proposing to expand the tax credit associated with employer student loan repay, which we're hoping will benefit this program, will benefit CHESLA ultimately, as well as obviously a lot of employees throughout the state. And then we're working, continuing to work on, this is what we've already have in the governor's bill right now, the comprehensive approach to legislation for CHESLA workforce incentive programs. Next slide. On the broaden, assess, and communicate impact, which was another one of our initiatives under our pillars, notable January 24, the Alliance District program was expanded to include paraprofessionals and counselors. So again, marketing efforts going on there. We've done targeted email campaigns and outreach with regard to Alliance District. Josh and his staff have been working very hard on college fairs, very busy in that regard. New educator orientation in New London, money conference for women, financial aid nights in various high schools. So all of these things reflect the hard work of the CHESLA staff in the first 7 months of this fiscal year. Next slide. Following that also, we did work with the Office of Workforce Strategy earlier in fiscal 24. We're hoping to continue that. Or as noted in legislation, we're trying to work with the governor's office more closely. Next slide. Technology, these are just some existing platforms, relatively new, that are in the accounting area that we're hoping will increase efficiency and some of the work that Carly does on the accounting side. Next slide. And then these are some of the things that we do kind of annually with regard to organizational identity and culture. Day of service in Keeney Park in last October, clean audit, new information security policy, ongoing ethics training, and board education, of which we just had another session. So those are really the highlights of the strategic plan status report. Any questions? Okay.
Anything from that? Okay. Nope. Go ahead, Jeanette.
And then lastly, I did want to talk about included in your package is the proposed strategic plan, a discussion draft based on staff input, board input from the board retreat that we had for strategic planning. And we're also, the effort is to simplify the structure a bit of the strategic plan. So it's a little bit easier to flow through it and sort of tie things together. So if you go to the next slide, Kara, I just want to touch on the next slide again for CHESLA. This is showing, you know, the CHESLA mission and vision are pretty much what they were, but what we're doing in lieu of these five or six strategic pillars that we had, and then we had objectives and initiatives, we're trying to simplify it. So we came up with these four principles that we're putting forth for this strategic plan: innovation, collaboration, communication, accountability, and action. And so we're grouping our initiatives under those four principles, and the goal is to achieve sustainable impact. So if you want to go to the next slide and the slide after that, we are maintaining the same values that we've had for the past number of years. Next slide, Kara. So just as an example, principle one, innovation, there's a description there, and we're trying to tie the description of the principle back to our values. So one of our values is can-do attitude. So for innovation, we're saying work creatively with a can-do attitude to move toward our vision. And then you'll see it's structured to have initiatives that are kind of broken out into external initiatives and internal initiatives. And we also are breaking it out into years one and two. So in the past, we sort of just lumped years one and two, or two and three, or, you know, however it works out. It's a 3-year plan. In the past, we just kind of lumped it all together. We never tried to break out any kind of timing. So that is a key change. And so you'll see as you page through it, by the logo, what the initiatives pertain to. So as shown here on this page, these are CHESLA's external initiatives with regard to innovation. And it speaks to some of the things we've touched on, working with OWS, considering a parent loan, increasing marketing for graduate loans, marketing to adult learners, first-gen students, as well as graduating high school students. So some of these things you may recognize because, for example, adult learners and first-gen, that's something that came out of the board strategic planning session with regard to CHESLA. So as you, you know, I don't know if you want to, after this meeting, go back to the document to sort of maybe reread it. But the concept is we go through each of these principles, and there are initiatives associated with CHIFA, initiatives associated with CHESLA. You'll see here's some continuing on for CHESLA under innovation, 0% revolving loan fund for high value occupations, exploring further use of CSLF to support CHESLA, more products for lower income families or lifelong learners. Again, that came out of the board session. Sustainability of the CHESLA scholarship program, and trying to identify any other sources of loan funding, you know, other than bonds. And then on the internal side, there's a new website in development right now that Shannon Reynolds is leading the effort on. And that's expected to go live this year, and there will be a translation into Spanish as well. So that feeds back also to some comments that came out of the board session. So I'm not going to page through the entire piece, but that's the concept. And one of the things we're also doing under the principle of accountability and action is we will be developing key performance indicators, KPIs, will be developed as part of an initiative under that principle. And those KPIs will, you know, tie back to the initiatives that are previously presented. So we'll have a clearer way of measuring our performance. Are we doing what we said we're going to do? How successful are we? So anyone who has, you know, if you have any comments now, I'm happy to hear them, or if there's any further discussion. Otherwise, anybody who wants to provide comments in the next, sometime later this week. If there's anything you want to send to me, that's fine also. So that's all I have on that. I don't know if you want to add anything, Peter.
Oh, that's fine. Does anyone have any questions for Jeanette on the fiscal 25-27 strategic plan discussion? Anyone? Okay. Very good.
Let me just say the rest of this process will be, we will be seeking, this will go to the chief of board tomorrow. We'll be seeking chief of board approval at the April board meeting. And then we'll seek CHESLA board approval at its next board meeting, full board meeting, which will be in June.
Okay. Thank you, Jeanette. Okay, Josh. Summary of the portfolio update.
Thanks, Peter. So I'll start on page 91 of the board package with the loan disbursement data. So for the second quarter, the in-school loan program disbursed about $1 million. And through the second quarter, the fiscal 24 disbursements total about $10.7 million, which represents a $1 million increase over fiscal 23 through quarter two. I then want to turn to page 93, which is the market segment data and our top school disbursements. So we have a status quo at the top, with the top three schools being UConn, Sacred Heart, and Quinnipiac. I did want to note here, the far right-hand column, the comparison to fiscal 23 through quarter two, Quinnipiac has seen the largest volume increase through quarter two when compared to fiscal 23. Moving on, I want to move to
Josh. Josh, yep. This is Peter. Just to follow up on that, the increase with Quinnipiac, can you attribute that to that anything? Can you attribute that to anything specific? I mean, did you go down and visit with any of their counselors or
was it just... No, nothing specific I can pinpoint that to.
Okay. But, I mean, it's significant.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. So moving to page 94, we have the 2023B comparison to the cash flow assumptions through February. The disbursements are about $700,000 ahead of the cash flow assumptions, which is great. You also see at the bottom of the page, the committed loan applications in the pipeline as of, March 1st. Moving on to page 95, we have the Refi CT refinance program loan disbursements. The second quarter dispersed about $543,000 for quarter two. Moving on to page 99, I just wanted to mention that pages 99 through 102 are the Alliance District reports, again, strictly for that quarter. As has been mentioned a few times on this meeting, the Alliance District program has dispersed about $1 million, and that's stayed pretty much steady throughout February. The program has impacted 58 professionals thus far. And again, CHESLA is actively trying to continue to market the program so that we see more disbursements for those in the Alliance District. And lastly, on page 103, we have the performance dashboard. I just wanted to mention at the bottom of page 103, we have the UAS servicing performance. UAS met performance standards for the quarter. And on page 104, the next page, Campus Dora is the loan originator. Also met performance standards for the quarter. So that's the end of my report. Try to cover a lot, make it short and efficient. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions regarding the portfolio information?
Josh, it was a very good summary. Thank you. Any questions for Josh? All right. Thank you, Josh.
All right. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. So here, if we can go to 106, this will just be an overview of our website and current and past marketing efforts. So for the financial literacy portal, CT Dollars and Cents, our continued goal is to kind of increase awareness and bring more eyeballs to the site. So this is for July 1, 2023 to December 30th, 2023. We had over 900 new visitors, 1,600 total visits, and over 6,000 sessions. Just sessions are interactive, our engagements throughout the site per website visit. And then our goal, obviously, with a new website is to just update the content to drive more eyeballs to the website. Next slide, please. So for the Chesa website, again, continued goal is to build awareness and bring visitors to the site. We saw over 25,000 new visitors to the Chesa website thanks to increased advertising partnerships and competitive rates. 80,000 page views, which was 48% increase from the year prior. Sessions increased by 27% and over 7% increase per visitor for the last year. And again, this is for a comparison of July 1, 2023 to December 30th, 2023.
Shannon, excuse me.
Yeah.
This is Peter Lisi. excuse me. Your second bullet there, over 25,000 new visitors.
Yep.
Those are visitors to the website that have never gone to the site before.
Totally new IP addresses. So I can't say that it's 100% accurate. It could be in the same household, but maybe a different co-borrower.
Yeah,
but
right.
It is or organic new IP addresses.
Okay,
that's
thank
how
you.
This tracked. No problem.
Yeah, thank you.
And Shannon, this is Julie Savino.
Yeah.
Do you know how many of the colleges or universities, at least in Connecticut or others, are using this on their website as a financial literacy
The
complement to their institutional financial literacy? I mean, we have this on our website as one of the main places for our students to go and do searching regarding financial literacy and this Connecticut Dollars and Cents. Do you know if anybody who else might be doing the same thing?
So I was going to ask, I was like, I didn't know if you meant Chesla or the financial literacy portal, CT Dollars and Cents. I don't know who has the CT Dollars and Cents from a university perspective. I do know some schools, obviously we're on preferred lender lists as a resource. And then I know we've actually had schools outside of the state that have us as well, but there's not many schools to my knowledge that have our financial literacy portal on or linked to their website.
Okay.
Any other questions? So from an outreach perspective, I met with Higher Heights Organization, Haven, and I'm scheduling financial literacy and financial aid night with the Hartford YWCA. Higher Heights was great. She meets with counselors in that area, in the New Haven area, on a monthly basis. So I got to connect with several schools, school counselors, and talked about Chesla. I mailed out Chesla information resources to Board of Education and high schools in the CT Alliance districts. We continued just outreach and promotion across all different platforms. And then we had our annual presentation at Chester High School this past week. And then the next slide. And then this is just to kind of go over and highlight some of the high impact sports marketing that we've placed in. I'm not sure if you guys saw any of them, but we were in the wild card games, the divisional playoff, UConn, men and women, and in the pregame for the Super Bowl and NBA All-Star game. So just to name a few, but those are some of the high impact sports that we have been in. I think that's it for me. If you guys have any other questions.
Any questions for Shannon? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
And Yesenia?
Hi, everybody. Just a small scholarship update. As of March 1st, our undergraduate scholarship is open to the public for students to apply. We will close that on May 1st. And then after the May 1st deadline, then the committee will meet and grade all of the applications and decide how many students will be awarding this year. And we will have those numbers for the next meeting. Other than that, I don't have anything else.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Yesenia. Any questions for Yesenia? All right. Is there any other business anyone would like to bring forward? Anything for the good of the cause? Well, I just have two announcements. And I'm hoping it's all right with one of our board members for me to say this. I believe it's public knowledge. But I want to congratulate Bettina on her upcoming retirement. I hope you enjoy retirement as much as I do. but we certainly will miss your participation on the CHESA board. And we do have a meeting in June, so I'm hoping that you'll be at that meeting. When is your retirement effective?
It's either July 1st or August 1st.
Okay. So this will not be your swan song today.
No. Peter, thank you very much.
No, but congratulations. It's well-deserved. And I, again, I'm hoping nothing but health and happiness in your retirement.
Thank you so much. And I'm looking at Tim Webb, because Webb and I were together in the bullpen back at Ehrlich Bober in the 1980s.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here. I'm a little angry. Congratulations, Bettina. That's wonderful.
Thanks,
Tim. Great
news. Thank you. Thanks, Peter.
And the other thing I wanted to mention to folks, Estella Lopez, a former board member of CHIFA, who left the state and gave up her position, has returned to the state, and we do have a vacancy on the CHESLA board. We have invited her to join the board. She has accepted, and at the CHIFA meeting tomorrow, we're expecting board action on her nomination. So again, just want to make everyone aware that it does look like we have an additional board member to join us and to fill out the roster. Estella Lopez was with the Connecticut State University system for a while and was on the CHIFA board for a number of years, and we're thrilled that she, when she returned to the state, that she was willing to serve on CHESLA. So that will be acted on tomorrow at the CHIFA board. So is there any other business for the CHESLA board at this time? If not, is there a motion for adjournment? I would entertain a motion for adjournment. Anyone?
Julie Savino, so moved.
Thanks, Julie. Is there a second?
Andrew Foster, second.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been moved and seconded to adjourn the CHESLA meeting. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. We are adjourned. And I think given the time, we can probably move right into the CSLF meeting, unless I hear an uprising from people if they'd like a 5-minute break. Other than that, why don't we continue on and push through?